Welcome to A Course in Miracles. So there is a, I suppose, an ignored bridge, I will call it. An ignored bridge of mind that is something that we all use every day, all the time. And we use it more or less, and people on a spiritual journey tend to use it in a very, very intimate way. And what I'm talking about is belief. Belief. It is a tool of mind. It's a funny thing because, you know, it's not really there. It's a belief. And yet you don't get anywhere. You don't do anything without it. It's kind of a bridge, really. But I want you to think about this word, because if you are here to heal your mind from stinking thinking, if you got wonderful, perfect thinking, you know, you would be out just using it and having a great time every minute of the day. But there's any minutes of the day where you have thoughts that are not welcome. You have thoughts in your own mind that you would rather not have. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. That's what we do. We clean that dirt off. That's the purification of A Course in Miracles. To let you know that it is you who has those thoughts and controls those thoughts. All of them. It's such great news, huh, Meg? It's such great news. It is. You're not a victim?
Nope.
You will not be a victim tomorrow. You're not a victim today. And never through your whole life, despite how bad it looked, were you a victim in the ways that matter most. And your beliefs is a big part of that. So let's take a few minutes now. And let's just visit your own mind. Open your own mind. See if you can surface this tool that you use all the time. Belief. Touch it. Feel it. Whew, what is belief? What do they do? What do beliefs do?
Create your reality.
They create your reality.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of bricks create a wall.
Like a bunch of bodies.
A bunch of bodies fill it in.
In this room. Yeah. I mean, I'd believe this. I wouldn't be here.
You believed that the door was open, that there was a meeting. You believed it was a certain day of the week.
And it happened.
What else did he believe? Believed he could make it here? What else did he believe? What else did you believe? What else did you have to believe in order to get here? The roads were open. I mean,
that there were roads
that you could, oh my God, I think we could go on and on and on before he even got out of his chair. There was a whole bunch of beliefs. Some of them installed days ahead of time. Making a world that on Thursday night, he could sit on that cushion by that door. Whew, makes a world. Yeah.
Well, in my case, you know, 69 years ago.
Ha. Huh.
Yeah, this is mushroomed.
You got beliefs? Everybody have beliefs?
I think so.
Awesome.
Do you believe you have beliefs?
Well, belief.
Thank God they're changing, getting rid of and going away and fading off into
they can change. Perception. They can change. What is a belief, David? What is it?
Something fixated on that label. Okay.
Sorry, other David. Yeah.
I forgot you're over there.
Seems like a... It's a thought about a thought. I'm a little puzzled.
A thought about a thought?
Well, it's Isn't belief a noun made out of a verb, believe? But a belief is sort of a principle out of which I construct the thoughts, through which I create the reality, and the thought becomes the perception. So belief is kind of a higher order thought, you know, principle.
Yeah, yeah. What makes a belief a belief instead of just
if the road was here 2 weeks ago, it would still be here today.
That's interesting. It's got a little bit of participation in it, a little verby.
Experience.
Where is the experience in a belief?
Experience.
Walt's in his chair with his feet up, sipping on his favorite plum juice, and he hasn't been outside.
No, but
he believes.
He was experiencing sitting in his chair with his feet up and drinking his plum juice.
Yeah.
And so he believes in the plum juice, and he believes in it.
He's been to this meeting. He's been down the right streets. He's made all the turns. It's
so
worked before.
Experience.
So that experience gave him a belief?
The experience is then taken over by thought, and then the thought goes back to what David said.
Uh-huh. Becomes active for today. Mm-hmm. Now it becomes more present. Okay. Okay, so it's colored by his past experience. I like it. And he has to participate.
But the belief creates experience.
Always.
Well, but there's... I mean, you know, we're talking about beliefs in a relatively positive context, but there's people who believe very hateful things.
Uh-huh.
About the world, about other people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've always thought belief as a level of consciousness was a relatively low level of human being.
Uh-huh.
But I've been thinking about what you said when we started this conversation about belief being a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I could just sort of reflect on my own path or process and know that belief is what got me in many cases over the bridge to actual experience. And then experience often will lead the way rather than belief, and then that's even fluid. But I've always chased not so much, I would note a belief, but I'd attempt to be somewhat responsible for that. It's just my belief.
Yeah, just my belief.
But if I follow what you were saying about that being access to something, I could also say that I've had many, many very valid, what rang as very true experiences
mm-hmm.
that validated something far beyond my belief.
So there's good beliefs and there's bad beliefs.
Well, from our human point of view, from God's point of view,
no.
I don't think there's any distinction.
We can be practical here.
Yeah.
What's good about the good beliefs? He just said, well, it's led me to experiences that I kept. They were bridges. I had the belief, and I thought I'm going to try this one day. Then I did, and it worked out great.
I can also say, though, that now that thinking about it, I've got beliefs that have taken me way down the wrong path.
Yes.
That have been very costly to me personally.
Yes, yes. You had the belief, and you said, I'm going to go for it. And you followed it, and it just took. As the belief was, that whatever was believed, became experience, it was considered to be detrimental. Down the staircase.
Well, it's more complicated than that. Let me see if I can give you an example. So I've held the belief that I can't trust anybody.
Mm.
That somebody always wants something from me. It's sort of an underlying theme that I always confront. Now, the cost of that is distance, isolation.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, there's just something that goes with that.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And the belief in this case is self-fulfilling in a lot of times. Right. I knew it. I was going to trust them. And if I did, look what would have happened. Look what happened. They did make trust them, and look what happened. Yeah, I'm not. I knew I was right. Yeah, yeah. Beliefs can be powerful, huh? Can shape your life, your world.
But the thought I had is that beliefs are rudders.
Aha!
It's the rudder.
Ooh.
It's like where the belief is.
Yes, yes.
Is what takes, steers life.
Yes.
In one direction.
Yes.
Or another direction.
This is what beliefs do.
So it's like, for me, it's like a rudder.
Uh-huh.
So if my belief
yes.
is in the whole social conditioning,
yes.
I was raised in a very materialistic society,
mm-hmm.
there is a lot of form and boxing and you do and don't do, and mm-hmm. if I believe all of that, mm-hmm. I will act a certain way.
Yep, I believe I can't trust people, they're only here to take from me.
But then we came in the 60s, and so we mm-hmm. blew apart those beliefs of our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And started to adopt other beliefs.
I believe I should open myself to people and give and receive freely, and this is a way to...
And believe in love uh-huh. rather than fear.
Make love and more love.
Mm-hmm. And
get stoned and make more love.
Was it the wrong meeting?
But that's a t-shirt from the 60s.
And so that did its thing. But back to that ruddering, it's like the process of the Course
uh-huh.
is, you know, the recognizing that socialization. That's where the fear mind is.
Yes.
And
after you go through a fear situation,
yeah.
if you ever take a minute and look back and say, what just happened? You look at which way the rudder was pointed.
Look at what?
Where the rudder was. What position was the rudder
yeah.
in?
Yeah,
the
yeah,
rudder
yeah.
was in defend myself. The rudder was in...
Shut down.
Withdraw. I could be hurt.
And I'm separate.
I could lose from this.
It's all these false beliefs.
Beliefs.
But all false beliefs.
Nonetheless, they're rudders.
They're false beliefs, but if they're what I'm believing, they are real.
And they do their work.
Yeah.
They do their work.
So then, allowing the divine...
Yes.
The divine presence...
Uh-huh.
The ego is like ferociously going, well... Why should you believe that?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, where's the validation? You know,
uh-huh.
sure, there's all this validation, there's all this talk in here.
Yeah.
But really, you know, and then there's the experiences I have had in life, you know, and we've still got the rudder here, but the belief, there's uh-huh. this challenge, you know, the rudder
yes.
is sort of like...
Yeah, that's that past. The past turns out to be this library that we would look on and say, how should I believe this situation? How should I set my rudder? Is it fearful? Is it hopeful? And I look out, what am I going to do but go to my past?
It's an experience.
Experience. Look it up. Uh-huh. Hello. First 10 lessons of A Course in Miracles are chipping and prying and trying to get you to get off your past drunkenness so maybe you have a chance to be present for just a moment and see how free you really are.
So, still, the belief now is in the divine.
Okay.
That there is a divine,
okay.
that in that place there's total peace.
Uh-huh. Yes.
One is not a victim, one isn't
uh-huh.
attacking Ooh. Or being attacked,
nice.
One's past is not even real.
These sounds like good beliefs. These
all
like
these horrible yeah. things going on aren't really happening,
uh-huh.
you know, so that's getting like, oh, really, okay, all right.
Uh-huh.
<You know? laughs> But, this is still ruddering. But when experiences of the divine start to happen,
mm-hmm.
it's like it takes a step beyond belief.
Yes.
It's a bridge.
Belief served its purpose.
Belief gets to a certain threshold,
yes.
but then there's a step beyond that is beyond belief.
Yes. Travel the rudder to you positively on all these wonderful things, and your devotion to the belief got you over this bridge.
But it's not just believing, because it's like it's talking about and saying, when you finally start to stop this rigid, enculturated
uh-huh.
belief system,
uh-huh.
when you're looking at things, you'll start to see this golden light around it. And
uh-huh.
then you'll know that you're beginning to get to the point of seeing
uh-huh.
reality.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes. And then it turns out that, after having crossed the bridge, you go back and say, you know what, the light was there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of things that blocked my ability to see the light.
So then you're beyond belief and you're into an experience.
You're into beyond belief is experience. That's where it goes. And before belief, I remember I asked you in the meditation, if you haven't figured out the words belief, how did it get there? How did the belief end up sticking? Some beliefs come and they go, why does some stick and stay and are interesting? Some you hold on to and sort of invest. Yeah, Ms. Ockle.
Okay. Beliefs are really, really critical because it's a way that we assist the world. We evaluate. And what the only thing that a human being, I'm talking about our egoic system, our thought system, is it going to benefit me?
Yep.
Or is it going to take away from me?
Here we go.
Yeah, it's like a dog. It wants food.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
When it's hungry, it goes for that food. So it's like how my mind works. It always goes for the good.
Yes.
Always.
That's always right. Goes for what always. It thinks is good.
What yes? It thinks
it's make
good.
Me think right. of expectation. The world, the word kept going through my head. Well, belief is sort of an expectation based on experience, right? And so when you spoke of belief as being a bridge, I thought, well, what is beyond expectation? Beyond expectation or belief would be some sort of openness. It's something bigger than that. I don't know what you're getting at, but I see that it's beyond anything I could conceive, right?
What's beyond expectation?
Possibility.
What happens to your beliefs? Where do they? If you get on that and you follow it, where does it go?
Well, as you were saying, when you get to the other side of this, belief or disbelief disappears.
Exactly.
Because why?
There's no more past.
Well, because all that there is presence.
Yes. And your expectations are not needed anymore because...
You're not trying to control stuff anymore? I don't know.
You got there. What?
You don't need it anymore.
Why don't you need the belief anymore?
Because you've already figured out where you are.
You've surrendered.
That was perfect.
What?
You are that which you have been looking for all along. You've already arrived at where you've been headed.
Lesson 284. Yes.
Okay. I think there's a step missing before that.
Yes.
And that it's a recognition that, you know, I don't know what this is for, to question. And then you have a choice.
Yes.
You can throw it to the Holy Spirit or not. That's the choice.
It's very key that belief is before knowing. Right. You have expectations that all go away once you find out the airport is open. And you can make it through traffic. You were believing all these things. I'm going to make it to my flight. But you know, you got to the airport through traffic. Geez, that checkout line was as bad as I... Checkout line. the security clearance line was as bad as I thought. My luggage does fit in the... I'm in. And now you're on the plane. And you still have 10 minutes to spare. All of these expectations you develop on the way to the airport are just useless. Do you think about it again? I'm sitting on the plane. Hello? Kidding? I'm on to where my beliefs have brought me to the experience of making my flight. It's now knowledge has arrived. Okay? Now, some of the steps that we've talked about many times in this room that we can kind of fill in a little bit is, where does a belief come from? Where does it start? It starts even less than a belief. Sure as heck further than knowing. It starts with just an idea. Pam said it. She said that, hey, listen, she came in last, right? So she knows that out in the reception area that there are a dozen of these things out there, and they say free, first come, first serve.
Books.
It's a whole stack, right? There's a whole stack of something out there, 12 of them. Aren't 12 of us, more than 12 of us maybe, so you know, it's like first come, first serve. It's just an idea. You don't know what it is. We know how many it is, so it's kind of interesting. And you know where we are, so it could be something valuable. It's kind of cool. And it's an idea. Now, a belief starts to form when Meg says, I didn't see the free sign. Pam said there's something. She's, now there's two. The belief is, I mean, the idea is moving to a belief. There really is something out there. It's starting to increase. Stefan says, oh, God, I think I know what it is. Ray has been giving these things away. Last year, I can't believe there's more of them. And he says what it is. We're moving up away from an idea to a belief that they're actually there. There's so many of them. And we're starting to, hello, invest. Masako says, I have beliefs and I keep beliefs that are good for me, that I want, that I can get something out of it. Beliefs I don't want, forget about it. You just wash them out of my head as fast as, yeah, I don't care. So you got an idea, and if you like the idea, it becomes a belief, or you understand it, and you invest in it even a little bit, you can start to have a belief around it. You have to fill in some things. Masako was talking about the judgment, and Stephen was talking about, how am I going to use this? It's just an idea, but it's improved somehow. It's become invested. It's a belief. Now that may determine which door you exit the building. The rudder may say, I think before the meditation, I'm going to squeeze out and maybe go to the bathroom and check out what these 12 things are. Maybe I'll just pocket one. The rudder could start working. The belief is installed, if it's present. See how powerful beliefs are. It can actually make you do things.
Like, is that true?
Is it true?
Yeah. Did we go look?
See anything.
You didn't see it? Oh my God, I can't believe you didn't see these. I already got mine, so I'm not so stressed. Yeah. You got yours too? Yeah. All right.
I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
No. There's something,
I guess.
They believe it.
There's something. There's an idea. Maybe. Kim's at the idea stage, and it's moving into belief because, you know, it's people kind of excited about it. I definitely got mine. I wouldn't miss a chance.
To me, that makes not, because if you're talking about something concrete and physical,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
What?
The belief in making it, the belief that there's something out there.
Have you seen it?
No.
but she's talking about it, okay? How many of them are there? How many of them are there? How many did I say there are?
12.
Maybe 13.
Maybe 13. Yes, and right. Pam took one, so maybe 11. So, there's a belief going on here. You don't know what it is. No matter what it is. My point is, with all this Course in Miracles stuff does not deal with the physical.
No.
Thank God. It'd be such a big book if we tried to cover all the physical possibilities of patience, of fear. How many things can you be afraid of? Oh my God. We're doing healing. We're working with sickness. Look at how condensed and thick we can get into all the different forms of sickness, mental, physical, cosmological. No, you know what? It turns out that all of these things, belief is invisible itself. It's thoughts about thoughts. I love what David said.
Mm-hmm.
That it kind of takes some, it's kind of a verb. It only exists when you're thinking about it.
Believing.
You're believing! Yeah. Interesting thing. But boy, I like what Miley said here too. He says, you know what? You got your beliefs installed and your boat's going to go where they point. They do something. Everybody has them. We all got beliefs.
I feel like there's, having jumped in later, that what you were saying is, you know, so familiar. And what you said, too, is also so familiar. So I feel like what, you know, we were discussing, like, beyond.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept thinking, it's actually a big old step back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did we believe when we were two?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a I didn't have a preconceived notion of my thermometer of abundance when mm-hmm. I was two.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what a bank account was. I didn't know what life savings was. I didn't know what debt was.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere...
But you may have already decided what's going on in the world on some level.
Sure.
My parents love me. My parents don't love me. They left me.
Well, up until age six, you download so much, yeah. right? You download so
blindly
much.
Download it.
You're just
maybe I can't
everything.
Trust people.
So, and I was just going to say, like my dad used to say, "It's only money." He used to say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's only money,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have any attachment mm-hmm. to that. My mom was different, you know, and we all had a different experience of learning about currency and abundance. And then I feel like that's a good example of this, like,
mm-hmm.
it started a long time ago, our relationship with abundance. With that's just one
Okay, let's take this for a moment. Yeah, started a long time ago. Okay.
Right?
Good. Yes, right? Yeah. Six, boy, sponge, six-year-old, soaking up all sorts of things. And father's chanting... Is he come? Oh, you can't trust people. You can't trust.
Yeah.
You know, if I
money's hard to come by.
You better watch your own stuff. Take care of yourself first, and then you'll be, you know, healthy, wealthy, and wise. And then little six-year-old Stephen just soaked it up and took notes mentally, and here he is today going, yeah, I kind of got this thing. It's tough to open up and trust, you know, real. You know. As beautiful, A Course in Miracles says, no matter when the belief was started, if you can think about it, it's here right now. There is not a past power under which you are stuck. Why, Big David? How does this work? He said he's changing his beliefs. He's like pulling out the old folder and going, wait a minute, wait a lesson 10.
I don't know if there's any left of those old beliefs.
I don't think I need that anymore. He's ripping apart his Course in Miracles every day. And you're going through and saying, wait a minute, this whole body fixation thing, this has been a bummer.
Yeah.
It's been a bummer recently, and it was a bummer in the past. And me needing it to do something for me in the future is not a good bet for my happiness now. Like that. Well, no matter when the belief was created, Course in Miracles wonderfully will bring us through these lessons to bust the ego and catch the laws under which it's operating. And they're all beliefs. They're all beliefs. Check your rudder. That explains why you're making all these left
sounds
turns.
Sounds really easy.
What sounds easy?
That's your belief.
Well, I mean, you've kind of been saying it. What, you know, it beliefs are a very powerful thing if they're not distinguished as such. And that's part of the work that we do, is to distinguish beliefs as beliefs, as opposed to being like a machine that just acts out, reacts to the world, has patterns of thought, constructs our whole world around things that we believe, but we have not necessarily, you know, been responsible for distinguishing it in this moment. Like a belief on top of belief on top of belief from the past that dictate how we often do life until something interrupts it and you go, oh.
Yes.
And you bring, you know, some of it to light. And
like,
then,
like A Course in Miracles is interrupted.
Then there's
this
a choice.
Yes.
Then there's a choice.
Then there's a choice.
At that moment in time.
Then there becomes a choice at that moment in time. Beautiful. So no need to condemn yourself for how you were and what you said and what you did. It's when the choice becomes available, now the awakening has occurred. And that's what a spiritual awakening is. That's what a miracle is. It goes from the choiceless to the free choice. From the committed physical to the infinite spiritual. That's what a miracle is. But until that moment arrives, very good. So can we make more of those moments arrive?
Yeah.
That's why we're here. That's why I'm here. Good. Good. Yes.
But what about the periods when you're just so stuck? Are you not doing something? Are you processing to go someplace else? Are you not processing a miracle? I mean, how do you
I'm trying to get my head around the periods of being so stuck.
Yes.
Hey, Kim, can I ask a question? So, because my experience is sometimes I'm stuck, but it takes me a minute or a day or a week to realize, oh, I'm stuck.
No, it does. I don't process that fast, obviously.
But you see what I'm saying? There is that period of time where you don't even know it's stuck. You know it's off. You're not having a whole lot of fun. Something's kind of funky going on.
Yeah. Kim has had an awakening, and she cannot go backwards now. She tasted freedom for a good amount of time, and it wasn't just a few minutes, from her own choices.
I was actually sharing earlier tonight that sometimes I almost wish I had not had those, because it makes these periods so much more uncomfortable.
Yes.
And the worst thing that I do is condemn myself for being in these periods of space.
Yes.
Judgment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I judge myself.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
And that's the worst thing that I can do.
This is where I say Course in Miracles can bring on its own form of depression. Because if you really do Course in Miracles, you will get an absolute buzz and a freedom and an awakening that it isn't all those people out there that I can't control anyway that are in my way. Oh my God, it's me. Mm-hmm. It's been my own thoughts. And then it shows you how to change some of those thoughts. And then it works, and you get some peace, you get some freedom, you start sleeping better. People are asking you, you've changed. You've changed. What? They just want to sit in her cubicle and soak up some easiness before they go back to work.
Do you reach out to others, Kim, like in that state? Because I experienced that too. I experienced myself. I have a different question, but in that state, if you were to reach out to probably anybody in this group.
Yes, I do.
I think part of it is just being alone. If you reach out to somebody in the group, they're probably not going to support the idea of your condemnation.
No. So what's going on now? Let's talk about the stuckness, okay?
Because
Stephen just said, he says, you know what? That's great. Reach out, okay? And Stephen says, I would reach out. Because I had 3 weeks later, I would remember to reach out. And I got 3 weeks of hell that on the third week, it's like, what a waste of time. Jeez. But there's those 3 weeks. So it's stuck. Yes?
I just want to add that the Course talks about the level of discomfort.
Yes.
And that is what saved me when I went through, not at first, I mean, I was very depressed for a while, but the Course talks about, I wish I could remember, and I think there's something in the very first chapter about the level of discomfort is important, because that's where you see where, I guess, where you would change your belief, where you could... I don't know. Am I talking, saying it right?
That's the best part. That's the part you got to use. Use that.
Use that.
You're not doing well. You're fitting discomfort. Whoa! Like Andrew says, great! Use it. Exactly what you need. Just use that to get out of your...
So the stuck. So Kim knows that she's stuck when she's stuck because she was not stuck for a while. Like, The Course talks about this.
Yeah.
And it says, now that you've had a taste of freedom, now that you know where the happiness comes from, and we've taught you where the sadness comes from, the depression comes from, the small thoughts come from, can't point to anybody, same place. And they show up. So, these are beliefs. These are beliefs that are active. And if you look back at the rudder, you'd explain why you keep going straight into the wall over and over. It's because you're believing in that, whatever limit it is, some kind of limit right there. So, now, everybody knows, right? Well, she means stuck, you know what she means. Everybody here knows exactly.
I better know.
Yes.
Or I'm in the wrong room.
Well,
say days or weeks, I'm going, well, how about being stuck for years?
Yes.
I was thinking that, too.
What's she talking about?
I'm not talking about a weekend. No.
Stuck. So, what do you mean? What do you? What's she mean, stuck?
It's awareness.
Well,
What?
There's an assumption here that my beliefs are my beliefs.
Yeah.
I mean, I got them.
Yes.
You know, but where did I get them?
So, you said it.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about...
Tell them.
About as if we were programmed. And I think, you know, a machine, I think that's being a little hard on us. We got rules from our parents who got them from their parents. And none of them deconflicted those rules when they married each other and passed them on.
And the Davis beliefs are different from Masako's beliefs, right?
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm suggesting is that if I took on this load prior to awareness, then it keeps coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you know...
Because his beliefs are...
It's not a blame thing.
Beliefs do things. You know, they're there. They're like a rudder. And when it's turned, you go the direction they're turned. Good night, Mike and me.
Good night.
What's this stuck? You got the stuck?
Yeah. Okay. So, when I... Okay, that's stuck. Another way of putting that is I don't like what's happening to me right now. Okay, because I've never heard anyone in their happiness and bliss and say, God, I'm stuck. So it's about what you see in that situation or the experience, you want to get rid of it because it's a discomfort. Okay, and I think the text also addresses, it's the idea that heaven is already here. And to sort of allow that to be, just accept it, surrender to, okay, well, this is an experience that I'm having, and when I see that I surrender, I sort of like allow it to be there, I'm bringing love to myself. Mm-hmm. And when I let go that it shouldn't be that way, mm-hmm. then something else in my freedom, that something else is allowed to come in and arise. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. That, and I don't know what the answer is because we're all different. The Holy Spirit, you know, gives us.
Now, thank God there is.
There's times, though, that you need to let go that same thing so many times, and then finally, did I ever let it go at all? Like, why is this still here? Mm-hmm. So I fully agree with what you're saying, and I feel like there's those things that are charged, and then there's those things that are less charged. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely challenges that are easier to remember and easier to surrender and easier to kind of laugh and say, I do not know what this is for, and this is all whatever, and, you know, traffic. But not that maybe those other things, those core things... that we, I think, you know, maybe don't have the ability to surrender on some level. So then there's that next step that has to come, which is to really say, like, I need help with this. I can't surrender this on my own. Like, help me here. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because I think sometimes that's the only thing.
So why would I hang on to it? My part of me says...
Conditioning.
I'm seeing some value.
Yeah.
Not being at peace.
Yep.
Because this is in my face. There's no value in it.
But I mean, but
there's part of me that I can just feel it. I know I can take 5 minutes and just sit in meditation. It'll do me good. But I'm sitting there, I'm hanging on to this fear. And I'm playing some kind of game and I'm valuing it. And I can see it. This is just something I've invested in. I can see it right there. And I don't want to let it go.
Yep.
I know it's hurting me, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate
it. I just want it to suck a little
bit. But it's really helpful.
No, I fully appreciate
it. I do, too.
That is exactly what I do.
Uh-huh.
I do hang on to them.
Yep.
I am invested in it.
Yep.
I'm afraid to let it go. It's a part of me that if I let it go, oh, my God, what if I'm happy?
Authentic.
That's almost as scary.
Well, that sounds like an ego identification that sure as hell doesn't want to die.
I know it's not true.
I know this.
And knowing that.
These are not things I don't know.
Now, these are very, very, very personal.
But maybe it's not a bad thing.
Well, who knows? It's like having an old car. The old car with rust spots on it. And, you know, the tires won't hold air, and there's water in the, you have to put water in the radiator every time you drive it, and not to mention the oil problem. And should you keep it, or should you let it go?
The only difference that I can see right now is I am so freaking angry.
Yes.
That's the added element that I haven't normally had before.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's a, if that means anything.
It's a good thing. Very good.
Yes. Yes, it's a very good thing. It's a very, very good thing.
Yes. Well, you know, I feel like...
Anger is above fear, by the way.
Oh.
In spiritual awakening, in an enlightenment journey...
The hierarchy of suckiness?
There's a hierarchy of suckiness, absolutely. And anger is above fear, so...
Where does it come in relationship to release? That's what I want to know.
In this fear, one thing you have might be the one thing you, the last thing that you really need to get rid of. It might be the biggie. Who knows?
But can we say that if she's having any response or reaction, even to her current state, that there's some beliefs there, that things could be or should be different? Yep. And that they can't be different right now because I wouldn't feel this way unless they were present. So it's not going to be different because I feel this way or I think this
and
way.
Doesn't it say in the Course somewhere, or maybe jumping, that we're writing the story?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we writing the story? Is that a Course quote somewhere?
Script is written.
Right?
Yep. Written.
So, wait a minute. It says, what does it say?
Well, what you're after is page 448. So we go to page 448 for a second.
Okay, thanks everybody.
And we can see
the, I don't know what I'm, I mean,
the kind of awakening that Pam is saying, hey,
wait a minute.
You know what? Why don't we stop dodging around here? This is page 448 in the text. It's called The Responsibility for Sight. Let's read these first, I guess, two paragraphs we'll do. So Pam, paragraph
sure.
one.
The responsibility for sight. We have repeated how little is asked of you to learn this course. It is the same small willingness you need to have your whole relationship transformed to joy. The little gift you offer to the Holy Spirit for which He gives you everything... The very little on which salvation rests. A tiny change of mind by which the crucifixion is changed to resurrection. And being true, it is so simple that it cannot fail to be completely understood. Rejected, yes, but not ambiguous.
Rejected, yeah, quite possibly. But at least it'll be something very simple you're rejecting. Oh boy. Welcome to A Course in Miracles.
And if you choose against it now, it will not be because it is obscure, but rather that this little cost seemed, in your judgment, to be too much to pay for peace.
I'm just going
to
hang on to what I believe, because this is way too much. This too much of a cost to just be peaceful. Under these circumstances, who would be? Okay, Big David.
This is the only thing that you need to... Or vision, happiness, release from pain, and the complete escape from sin. All to be given you. Say only this, but mean it with no reservation, for here the power of salvation lies. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. Decide yourself no longer that you are hopeless.
And that's deceive yourself no longer.
Deceive yourself no longer that you are helpless in the face of what is done to you.
Done to you, you poor victim, you.
Acknowledge but that you have been mistaken. And all efforts of your mistakes will disappear.
And then, New Girl, would you read the first sentence of the next paragraph? I'm terrible at names. Sorry about that.
It is impossible the Son of God be merely driven by events outside of him.
Period. And then it says that about five more times. Well, that's what A Course in Miracles says. It says that there isn't anything. There's nothing outside that's making you think anything.
Well, in another version, it's like what you were saying. What you resist will persist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the key is, not to get all shitty with yourself because you've gone down some gnarly path, but there's just some level of just being willing to be with it without judging it, without judging yourself, just to be present. And just that alone, often it'll start to lighten up. There'll be this, because as long as you're resisting it, man, you are never going to have a change of mind.
Yep.
But a little bit of acceptance of, wow, this is just what's going on right now. I can totally get it. I'm human. There's this. There's, some conversation that would get you to a little more neutral territory where maybe then it would occur to you, I'm stuck. I could use some help here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I like the conversation A Course in Miracles makes me have every time I get in that situation. And no matter when, some form, if you do A Course in Miracles, some form you're going to get to the black and white statement that are in this book that challenges what it is I'm worried about or the discomfort I'm having with something like, for example, I, that's pretty personal when I say I, I am not a body. Ooh. I am free. For I'm still as God created me. Despite all the thinking, the thoughts and the beliefs that I've piled since then, I'm not a body. I didn't change me. I'm still as God created me. God created me free. Now either God is or God isn't. And either God is good or God is bad. Those are very personal things that you have to meditate on and choose. Those answers are not here. Except for it says God is love and you're love too and all that. Pretty words. But these are very personal things that you have to actually arrive at to discover the spark in you that says there is good and I want it. And then there comes that passage, I can have it. These are very, very personal things that happen usually before you get to A Course in Miracles. You've had some of these big life-challenging things and you've come. There's a little spark that has shown up in the dark and then you need more answers of what that is. A Course in Miracles will take you there. Kim knows. There's a light. There's a spark there. She knows.
Stop me if this is diverging. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that our beliefs, we have many beliefs that are very deeply subliminal. They're not anywhere near our consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that it often takes discomfort for them to be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a birthing process, which isn't very comfortable. Mm-hmm. But it can be if one is wide open and surrendering and accepting of the process. But it's still not in this smooth...
Anybody here had two babies? Two children? Mm. Was the second one different from the first?
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like you knew what was coming as much as it might hurt or what...
It, no, I loved it until I went into labor. And then I went,
But anyway, the we have beliefs that are so deep and...
Yep.
So dark under there that something has to happen in order to see them.
Yes, indeed. Like this, where the hell did I get the idea not to trust anybody? He's challenging it now. Before, it was strength, probably. Some part in his life he thought, well, it's a good thing I don't trust people. It's working out for me.
No, I was independent. I can do this on my own.
I'm independent, doing my own. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, but now, wait a minute, there's a cost to that. It's deep-seated beliefs, yeah. Of Course in Miracles says that in order for you to forgive something, forgiveness just means release. It means let it go rather than hang on to it and judge it and defend it. Say, let it go. How can you be free of something? That's what forgiveness means, be free of it. You can't forgive something unless you're looking at it. Yeah, that's why the first lessons don't say, just forgive everything and go to peace. No, it starts with a pencil. and it wants you to notice if there are bite marks on that pencil, and is that good or bad? Really specific.
And you were just...
I think I get hung up in the thinking that I have to understand what it is. And when I can't get to that understanding, then it turns into frustration.
Ah.
And then it turns into obsession. And
okay,
harder,
you're ready for this.
To let go
you're of. Ready for this now. Your first work is with A Course in Miracles is to determine whether or not you can possibly be free. Does life have to suck so bad? Does it? And your first work with A Course in Miracles is you get a glimpse of freedom. Freedom now. And it says, you know what? If I change my mind, I change my thoughts, then things change. I actually feel different when I think differently. Whoa, I got to work it. That's your first path and passage with A Course in Miracles. It is to discover the power of your own mind. Now, life still sucks around you, and you will have ups and downs, and darknesses will come. You, Kim, are personally at a stage now where the generalization temptation or promise is arriving. It's useless when you first start A Course in Miracles to generalize. In fact, it's backwards to generalize. No, you don't even know how powerful and personal and immediate your thoughts are. A Course in Miracles will teach you what your thoughts do, when they do it, what they look like, and where and how many you have. I mean, it really does get you in touch with what's going on. What is your life? It's your next thought, I say. But you've learned that. You've tasted it, and you've found some freedom with it. But you are now at a point to discover. The world has an infinite number of problems, Kim. Oh my God, you can't solve them all. They will keep coming. You'll be a busy forgiver, all right, with so many challenges coming day after day after year after age after wrinkle after cancer after money after... Oh, when will it ever stop?
Ego is exquisitely sneaky.
It's sneaky.
And I think, because I've gotten hung up on the understanding thing, too, and I know that's a dead-end road. You know, it's not, the stuff that we're transforming and the process of it isn't necessarily understandable in the linear way of thinking that we comprehend what it is to understand something. So that's a trap, in fact.
It's a trap, because, well, I guess it's about time we go look at it. We're right there, actually. I think it's later. It is around page 500. And 75, somewhere.
5.89.
Yeah, I mean that's.
Yeah,
but you know what? Let's skip this. This is gonna take us in the wrong direction for tonight, and let's instead go to page 445. Okay, and what we're talking about is the idea of trying to understand so that I can be free. Understand the problem. The practicality of finding out how strong your mind is really, really critical, and you ain't going nowhere without it. You are a victim until you discover that you're not. Now there's a whole new challenge that Kim is in, that Stephen talked about. So let's read, who's up? David, will you read paragraph 1 in the introduction?
Projection. Makes perception.
That's a really short sentence, but it's an entire teaching. It's A Course in Miracles in 3 words. Half of the book, anyway. Projection makes perception. perception. What you perceive is what you think is real. Your beliefs are buried in what you're perceiving. Coming from, oh my God, so much in three words. Please continue.
Projection makes perception. The world you see is what you gave it. Let's do that one again. The world you see is what you gave it, nothing more than that. But though it is no more than that, it is not less. Therefore, to you it is important. It is the witness to your state of mind, the outside picture of an inward condition. As a man thinketh, so does he perceive. Therefore, seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Perception is a result and not a cause. And that is why order of difficulty in miracles is meaningless. Everything is looked upon with vision, is healed and holy. I think I wrote that wrong. Everything looked upon with vision is healed and holy. Nothing perceived without it means anything. And where there is no meaning, there is chaos.
Okay. So, Kim's got the idea that her mind is powerful enough to make a difference in what she experiences. But now you're up against these... Do I even know what the problem is? Do I even know? I don't even know where to look. I just know how I feel. That clever little ego.
Seek and never find.
Seek and do not find. The ego will apply its craft now to your spiritual awakening. Very good. Now, Jason.
Thinking of a Buddhist antidote to what you just said. It's all happening, but it's not happening to anyone.
I would chase that one with the top of the middle sentence here, 7. Seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Mm-hmm. What Jason said, my ego is part of this world thing. Mm-hmm. It's not me.
Yeah.
Just like my body isn't me.
Yes.
So... this is telling me, in a way, not to change my ego, but change my perception of what that is, in terms of my identity, in terms of many things.
Very, very personal. And the more immediate you make these changes, meaning the closer to what you think you are, when I say immediate, the more immediate it gets, the more powerful the change is. The least immediate is like changing a pencil. Or a stain in the carpet during the early lessons. The more immediate is now what you think about your identity. Very good.
So what you were using the word charge to refer to attachment.
Mm-hmm.
So the really difficult attachments are those that are so close in you can't see them. Where is it?
Yes. And they are... the rudder's been set, and so... you're getting steered into a wall over and over again.
There's something behind me.
Uh-huh. Now, with enough work with the Course in Miracles, and that's what I say, it's not step one. Not step one. But you learn how to become more immediate with your experience. To what is actually going on with your discomfort. To what is it happening? To what can it happen? How does it come about? And do I need to know where it came from to recognize what's happening right now? That's why I say the generalization now is something you might start being able to touch, because Miracle Principle 1 becomes your guide. Miracle Principle 1, there's no order of difficulty in miracles. One is not larger or smaller. The meaning, miracle being a change of mind, there's no order of difficulty. Because, of course, the miracles knows that they're all the difficulties are on the same level. They're all on the same level. The cancer, or the broken shoelace, or the gas tank that's almost empty. Well, you said cancer and a gas tank and a shoelace. How could those be the same level? Oh my God, you... What kind of kind of world are you living in, Andrew? Jeez!
Are they all unreal?
Well, those are fighting words, okay? They're fighting words. Until you start tasting peace. Until you go to the peace that passes understanding. Understanding is analysis, and that's the world of the ego. More and less happy is of the ego. But you arrive at the center of what happiness is at some point. That's what we call a holy instant. When you've actually allowed a miracle, which is just a shift in perception about some stinking thing you got going on, okay? You decide, wait a minute, it's not really as bad as all that. In fact, it can't actually touch me. I'm going to stop pretending like it is touching me. That's forgiveness now. Forgiveness is I'm not going to hold the same thoughts I've had about this terrible thing, which I've just realized is only terrible because I make it terrible. There's lots of beliefs that we hold over our own head about our bodies, about our money, about our relationships, on and on and on, our politics, our future, our climate. These things are suppressing, and a miracle can relieve you. A miracle, though, has to precede the forget. Don't just stop thinking about it. That's like denial. Denial leads to addictions that are insidious. And come back. The problem comes back year after year. You try to push it over with some kind of a drug or some kind of a person. No. Don't just stop thinking about it. No. We need a miracle first that shifts your understanding of whatever the situation is. And then you release. And that's forgiveness. Okay? You need to actually have this experience with something that matters to you in your life to experience stage three, which is the holy instant. The holy instant is a moment of awakeness from which you can never go fully asleep again.
And relief.
And relief. Mm-hmm. From the release, there's a relief. The forgiveness is a release. It's like a verb. But it's based on I'm really letting go of nothing. I'm just letting go of my repetitive, habitual, stinking thinking that I no longer have, because I know it doesn't actually harm me. What will harm me is I keep thinking about it. Waking up in the morning, think about the same problem over and over. You know, that just wastes my life. Of Course in Miracles, and I think it's like lesson four or five, it's like meaningless thoughts. Stop that. Okay? Then, though, you do this progress and do the release, and you take an easy breath in the middle of a situation that used to piss you off or make things hard. And you take an easy breath during that situation. That's a holy instant. Wow. In that moment, you are reborn. This is spiritual air you're breathing. It is a spiritual awakening. You've come back to you, the freedom. This is where you say, well, I'm not a body. I am free. I'm still as God created me. Actually, it makes sense. Only when you've had what I'm talking about. This is the rite of passage. And it is simply miracle, forgiveness, holy instant. And you breathe the easy air. Wow. Okay? Yes?
Well, I'm listening to a hypnotist's tape on anger. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, a tool is, and I've been using it the last couple of weeks. It's been great. It's when I feel anger, the thoughts, first thing in the morning, I'm angry about something, whatever, is to take a breath through my nose and let it out through the mouth. So that changes my placement of it all. It changes the situation up here.
You know why? Because you're breaking the cycle.
Yeah, it's like a loop. It's breaking the loop. And it's working.
It doesn't have to be your breath. You could be standing on one foot.
Yeah.
And close one eye, the opposite eye, not the same eye, don't do that, the opposite eye. That'll do it too.
That's great.
Because the mind is this hamster on a wheel, right? Okay, turn to, turn into the workbook now, page 242. One of the most delicious lessons. I mean, they're all so delicious, but come on, you got to admit, this one's radical. This is where, somebody lock the door, she's going to run. She's going to
42.
Okay, page 242. We got a new girl.
Lesson
132? Lesson 132. Are we there?
Almost. One more, please.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a great lesson. I wish we had more time.
All right.
I know. It's
the world
tempting.
From all I thought it was.
Woo!
What keeps the world in chains but your beliefs? And what can save the world except yourself? Belief is powerful indeed. I thought you.
Do you notice that your beliefs is not capitalized and self is?
Except yours.
Sentence one, yours, not capitalized, and it shouldn't be. Your stinking thinking is for the small you. Okay, please continue.
Belief is powerful indeed. The thoughts you hold are mighty, and illusions are as strong in their effects as is the truth.
Wow! Illusions are as strong in their effects as is the truth. They're the same in power. They're strong in their illusions and truth. Get it? That's why I love this book. It really, because that's my experience. I would love to make truth more powerful, you know, so that always truth wins. And all I have to do is just, you know, drink that, and all my illusions go away.
But it's your truth, not mine. Right, Andrew? It's our egotistical. It's your truth, his truth. 7 billion truths going around.
Well, the truth is true, and illusions are not true. Yeah, if I think about illusions, there they are. They're starting to make them behave like the truth because they keep using up my time and my energy and my beliefs, and they do things. Oh, I think this is a real... You get to this tipping point right here, this teeter-totter, where the illusions and the truth are equally powerful. I haven't heard that anyplace else but in this book, but it's been my experience. Mm-hmm. I've lived this. I've lived it. If the truth is more powerful, if all the books I've read and the places I've gone and the churches I've sat through and satsangs I've sat through, trips to India and everything else, well, I would be so drunk on truth you couldn't stop me. But the fact is that these illusions that I'm sneak up, the ones that are in my back pocket, the ones I pull out when I get afraid, it's really powerful. In fact, they make a world. Let's continue.
A madman thinks the world he sees is real and does not doubt it, nor can he be swayed by questioning his thought's effects.
Mm-hmm.
It is but when their source is raised to question that the hope of freedom comes to him at last.
There you go. There's your savior. It's when the source of these thoughts is looked at. Where did this stuck thought come from? I don't care what the stuck thought is anymore. You needed to care what it was before. But I think you're at the point now where you can look at the source. You start to look at the source of your thoughts. And it, of course, beautifully describes. It says, you know, from the father of the thought, whatever fathered the thought, comes the effects of the thought. And Stephen, who just walked out, he talked about the good thoughts and the bad thoughts. And the good thoughts might have had their ground in, I'm going to improve myself in some way. I'm going to give up sugar, cigarettes, or whatever the thing is, give up today. Versus the bad thoughts, which is like, still free. But it's a negative freedom. And it says, I'm feeling weak, I'm feeling depressed, I'm feeling tired, lonely, unworthy, and so I'm going to go take this drug that will jack me up for about an hour and a half or whatever. I don't know how long the drug lasts.
Coffee.
Drink, caffeine it up. Look at the source of these two thoughts.
You know, I'm having cognitive dissonance. Could you give me another example?
Yes. So it's a matter of a staircase. You're standing on a staircase, and one of them leads up the stairs to light and to openness. And if you go down the staircase, it's the basement. There are no lights on. The bulb is broken. So it's going to be dark and cold, and you can hurt yourself. The basement is down. Down feels like going down. That's why I love this analogy. But up, the light's up there, the sun's up there, the skylight is up there. I can see where I'm going. So a good thought is, go up. But it's going to be some work, isn't it? Make a choice. One thought says, well, it's a lot easier to go downstairs and a little tired. You can't stand on the staircase all night, so I'm going to go down because it's easier. Take the drug. It's really easy. It's quick and easy. go ahead, go for some smoke and some blurriness. And a little bit of work, though, from my heart says if I go up, don't take the drug. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get out of this situation and go home or go to my friend's house. Yeah.
Vision.
Clear up. Follow your vision instead of your sight. I want that. I want that. That's a whole different experience. From that father, from that source, comes a different effect. Okay? Okay. Awesome. Let's continue.
Thank you.
Walt?
Get his salvation easily achieved, for anyone is free to change his mind, and all his thoughts change with it. Now the source of thought has shifted, for to change your mind means you have changed the source of all ideas you think or ever thought or yet will think.
Other than that, you know, geez, that's all of them.
You free the past from what you thought before. You free the future from all ancient thoughts of seeking what you do not want to find.
Woo! Mm. Yeah, baby!
That's good.
Read some more good news for us, Stephen.
The present now remains the only time.
Now that's key, Kim. As you well know, when you come into the exact present, there is no feeling good, there is no feeling bad. But there's freedom. Mm. When you come into the exact present, it's the whole idea of meditation. I hope everybody's gone into that stillness, at least for a few moments, to actually stumble into real stillness. Or it's like, whoa, spacious freedom happens. You can't come back from that ever once you touch it. Good. Let's continue.
The present now remains the only time. Here in the present is the world set free. For as you let the past be lifted and release the future from your ancient fears, you find escape and give it to the world. You have enslaved the world with all your fears, your doubts and miseries, your pain and tears, and all your sorrows press on it and keep the world a prisoner to your beliefs. Death strikes it everywhere because you hold the bitter thoughts of death within your mind.
That's right. What you think is what you get. How you see the world, see, that's how you see the world. See the circle? Pretty easy math, too, huh?
You see what you believe.
You see what you believe. Mm-hmm. It, of course, says, you know, if you want to know what you believe, open your eyes. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's what you believe.
We're living for.
Course knows, the author of the Course knows what you are, in truth. You're actually a creator. You think you're a victim. You think you're this body, and you go through space, and you're going to get what's coming. And that will play out. Because of what you are. You're very powerful. You've done it. You did it! Congratulations, Meg! You know, the whole planet, going around the sun, the whole thing, you get it all. It's all working.
That's right.
Miley, here you go. There you are, it worked. It's working. The author knows what you really are.
Well, the part that gets me is this, you know. You have enslaved the world with all your fears, your doubts and miseries, your pain and tears, and all your sorrows press on it. Am I in a different
place? No, you're right.
And all your sorrows press on it and keep the world a prisoner to your beliefs.
Mm. Pretty heavy.
It's very heavy. It's, you know, and the idea that you release the world when you release yourself is really interesting.
Yep.
And I know I don't have it yet.
Yep.
It's out there.
Sometimes this book goes to higher levels of discussion. Like I told you, they're like 7 or 12. This is one of the high ones. But it's said in so casually because of what it's pointing at is your ultimate freedom includes the freedom of the world. The world, because there are not two, everything is one and it flows from its source. Even as you seem to be something out there, the author of this book knows that you're creating, you're experiencing your own creation. In this case, though, thank God, it's just a making. You're not making something permanent. You're not making something true. Just like a movie in Hollywood. They're really convincing with good actors and a big budget. It gets me to cry, you know? It gets, or just grab my pillow and in bright white knuckle. The more they work. They seem so real. Well, that's because they are real. Well, a real movie. And a real good one, too. But they're not true. The book is saying you have a real body. But it's not true. And you're not that. The book is saying you have a real world that is held in darkness with your belief now in darkness. And that darkness can hide. That's what holds it in place. You've got to go to the source to find your freedom. If we stay in the world of ego, you stay only in time and space, you will continue to get what time and space delivers. And it will repeat, because this is what you've chosen. You've chosen to escape from awareness of oneness, to escape from the awareness of a spiritual reality, instead of going for the material reality, which, you know, I know that one. It's very reliable. It's addictive, even, really.
Believable.
It's easy. Now. Yeah. The Course says, you have no idea how hard you're working to maintain this. You have no idea. I have an idea, because I've become still. I've had that. I've had the ease occur. And now I realize, wow, fantastic movie. Very complex. You know the people on the screen, you know, when the movie's over? How many hundreds and hundreds of people? It was only 90 minutes or Jesus. And all of that went into it. Whew. Work. All right, well, there's a little more here. Oh, my God. I wish we had more time.
My God.
Okay, we got to read one more.
We're always in the present.
We got to read one more paragraph. Or did we finish, Walt? Did I interrupt?
No. Steve was last.
Oh, Stephen was reading?
Last, I passed to.
Okay. Yes. What were we reading?
Paragraph 4.
242.
Yep.
The world is nothing in itself. Your mind must give it meaning. And what you behold upon it are your wishes acted out so you can look on them and think them real. Perhaps you think you did not make the world, but came unwillingly to what was made already, hardly waiting for your thoughts to give it meaning. Yet in truth, you found exactly what you looked for when you came.
Woo! Kim, read for us paragraph 5, but go ahead, read the whole paragraph.
There is no world apart from what you wish, and herein lies your ultimate release.
Mm-hmm.
Change but your mind on what you want to see, and all the world must change accordingly. Ideas have not their source. Ideas leave not their source. The central theme is often stated in the text and must be borne in mind if you would understand the lesson for today. It is not pride which tells you that you made the world you see and that it changes as you change your mind.
It is not pride which tells you that you made the world you see and that it changes as you change your mind. Okay, Meg, hit it. 6 is really great, too.
But it is pride that argues you have come into a world quite separate from yourself.
That's pride.
Impervious to what you think, and quite apart from what you chance to think it is.
So I'm a victim. That's really prideful, turns out.
There is no world. This is the central thought the Course attempts to teach. Not everyone is ready to accept it.
Oh. Yeah. You know who you are.
Sorry.
Right. Not everyone is ready to accept it, and each one must go as far as he can let himself be led along the road to truth. He will return and go still further, or perhaps step back a while and then return again.
Yes. Such a great, the whole lesson is great. Let me see if I can put us back into tonight's. Okay, are you ready? Okay, flip back. We will go back to that lesson many more times, but for now, flip back to page 399 in the text. And under this whole discussion we've just had about beliefs and the power of beliefs, where do I find myself? 399 in the text. And this tease, it says, well, you have to go as far as you allow yourself to go, you should go. You look, like I say, there's many levels being taught. I mean, I'll come back year after year.
Go back to 19.
What? Yes.
How exciting.
Hello. Isn't it great? Woo.
That's so cool.
Okay. Read for us paragraph 6. This is crazy.
The inevitable compromise is the belief that the body must be healed and not the mind. For this divided goal has given both an equal reality, which could be possible only if the mind is limited to the body and divided into little parts of seeming wholeness, but without connection. This will not harm the body, but it will keep the delusional thought system in the mind. Here, then, is healing needed. And it is here that healing is. For God gave healing not apart from sickness, nor established remedy where sickness cannot be. They are together. And when they are seen together, all attempts to keep both truth and illusion in the mind, where both must be, are recognized as dedication to illusion and given up when brought to truth and seen as totally unreconcilable with truth in any respect or in any way.
When you go to the source of a thought, you will discover whether it came from fear or from love. Did it come from going up the staircase or down? And then you'll know whether or not to follow it. Looking at the source is key. It's key. Beliefs are strong. They do things. The inevitable compromise, this is paragraph 6, the inevitable compromise is the belief that the body must be healed and not the mind, for this divided goal is given both body and mind an equal reality. You feel sick, you say the body is sick. Proof. For this divided goal is given both an equal reality, which could be possible only if the mind is limited to the body and divided into little parts of seeming wholeness, but without connection. Okay, that saying is that the body can feel. The body tells you what it feels. Little fractured, separate thing with its own opinion.
That's really helpful.
But you know what came up with that too?
Yeah.
A defense mechanism for trauma is, what's the term? It's where you scatter all your reality from each other to protect, so you won't contaminate the system.
Dissociation.
Dissociation.
No, it's not just disassociation, it's compartmentalization.
Ah, yeah, interesting.
Because that's the major disease of the mind.
Huh.
Compartmentalization.
Wow. Wow.
And that's, this is like this.
Oh, well, did you go? Wow. Yeah.
So it's defining. Compartmentalization, is it defining?
Compartmentalization is separating. It's like, this happened over here, and this was really terrible, so we'll put it in a room down this long corridor way over here. My family life's way over here, and we'll keep it separate so that it doesn't get contaminated. My business world's over here, and school's over here. And we'll keep them far apart from each other because there's some disease that if it infiltrates, it'll destroy the whole system. And that'll be the end of me.
Very good. Very good little separation technique for safety.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. It's good, Miley. We're going to work with that one. That's good.
Program for unwholeness. I said it's a program for unwholeness.
Unwholeness.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Keep separation intact.
And you, and that separation is working for you. But the problem is...
Well, it actually works when you're a child. And you, the risk is insanity or some system that will keep you, that will maintain you in adulthood where you can then deal
but
with
it. Only a madman would.
Yeah, but it's conditional.
Yeah.
Conditional, because you happen to visit every little place in common, and they're all in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, beautiful. It's totally false. But.
Yes, totally false. A dream, a fantasy. Okay. This will not harm the body, but it will keep the delusional thought system in the mind. Beautiful. Here, then, is healing needed, here being in the mind, where the delusional thought system is being kept, where the belief is being held on to, the belief of loss, whatever form, is sickness. That's where the healing would occur. Even out there, you can change things. And we can read about that, too. We will later on. We read about, you know, pills and doctors and things like that. But right now we're dealing with the big strokes, which is what you think is what you get. That's really the healing. That's really the message of A Course in Miracles. No matter what you're dealing with, it's your thoughts about it that give you the experience of it. Always, that's what we're doing. Okay, and it's here in the mind that healing is. For God gave healing. God is simply the truth. God's not some dude doling out goodies for those who pray, and those who don't pray, you don't get nothing. That's not.
Cases, you got to pay for it.
You got to pay for it with something. That's not God. God is much more like the tree with the shade, and whatever goes underneath it gets the shade. Doesn't matter, saint or sinner alike. You just go get the shade. It's waiting. It is. See, the shade is. It's not particular. That's like God. Just it's just what is. Healing and sickness are together. And when they are seen together, all attempts to keep both truth and illusion in the mind, now where both must be, but the attempts to keep them together are recognized as dedication to illusion. But I'm trying to keep the truth in here, too. I'm trying to be loving, David.
Don't work.
Trying to be patient. I want to be honest.
Do it once.
I want to be tolerant. I want to be trusting. But I got all these things. I can't trust that person, and I'm running out of time, and I really can't afford, and because of, you know, I am vulnerable in the pocketbook, and because, boy, am I squashing all those wonderful ideas of patience, honesty, gentleness, gratitude. They're getting squeezed out now by the illusions I'm holding as powerful. So it turns out this dedication is really to illusion, to have both the thoughts of weakness and the thoughts of strength together at the same time is actually thoughts of weakness, isn't it? The weakness attacks the strength. The strength is passed over by the weakness. Strength is. Weakness is, it turns out, are chosen. Your vulnerability is a choice for the illusory part of your mind. Page 1, Course in Miracles, nothing real can be threatened. See, that's what makes it real. Truth is true because it is. It's the untrue that comes and goes. Those are weaknesses. So nothing real can be threatened. And, well, thank God, nothing unreal actually exists. Because it's unreal, see? That's why it doesn't exist. How do you know it's unreal? Because it can change. Because it's vulnerable. It's all proven right there in those first few words. Your own tests for truth are right there. But you've got to go to the source of your thoughts to figure out which ones are true, which ones are worthwhile. How do I know, Andrew? How do I know which thoughts are worthwhile? How do they make you feel? The evidence is there. You got to look, you know. We've been sleeping most of our lives. I'm waking up. I'm looking now. And there's all sorts of things I don't go down a lot of staircases anymore that I used to go down looking for something. Not even close. No interest. Mm. They're valueless. Yeah. Completely valueless. Yeah. Okay. So, oh, thank God, huh? They're both together. Same place, same mind. You're only one thought away. Shall I go up? Shall I go down? That's it. Really, really personal, really immediate. They're the same place. Right? Sentence 7. They're together. When they're seen together, all attempts to keep both the truth and illusion in the mind, where both must be, that's the fine print, are recognized as dedication to illusion and given up now when brought to truth. And seen as totally unreconcilable with truth in any respect or in any way. Now that's the beauty of truth in its simplicity and unchangeableness. All right. Let's push it a little bit. Let me see. Let's see how much we can get through. Turn to page 592. And this might be helpful, Kim, for what you were talking about. Look at this section 592 called Reversing Cause and Effect, you know, Effect and Cause. Okay, this is good because this is going to... This is perfect. Okay. I think I'm up, right? Am I up? Okay. Reversing effect and cause. Now, without a cause, there can be no effects. And yet, without effects, well, there's no cause. The cause, a cause is made by its effects. See, the Father is a Father, see, by His Son. Effects do not create their cause, but they establish its causation. Thus, the Son gives fatherhood to His Creator and receives the gift that He has given Him. It's because He is God's Son that He must also be a Father who creates as God created Him. The circle of creation has no end. Its starting and its ending are the same. But in itself, it holds the universe of all creation without beginning and without an end. Okay, we're just going to skip over some of the huge metaphysics going on there. But I remember I told you about the levels of discussion. You might be able to smell a different level going on there. Paragraph 2, please. We're in a hurry now, so I just want to get to some of the meat in here before we go.
Fatherhood is creation. Love must be extended. Purity is not confined. It is the nature of the innocent to be forever uncontained, without a barrier or limitation. Thus is purity not of the body, nor can it be found where limitation is. The body can be healed by its effects, which are as limitless as is itself. Yet must all healing come about because the mind is recognized as not within the body, and its innocence is quite apart from it, and where all healing is.
So you've got to ask yourself, do you live in your mind or do you live in your body? We would do a whole meditation on this if we weren't so already knowing the answer. Do you live in your mind or do you live in your body? You really live in your mind, huh? Right? Everybody got that? Feel pretty comfortable with that? Despite having a body, where do you really live in the body?
No, but it sure is a pain in the neck.
You can, yeah. You sure?
You take it along with you.
Yeah. Sure helps to have some healing thoughts around it.
Yeah.
This changes pain and suffering into maybe only pain, which is a lot better than pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Can we have pain without suffering?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
freedom,
yeah.
You talked about.
Yeah. What?
In the middle of the freedom.
What?
The freedom you talked about earlier.
Yes, indeed.
In the middle.
Yes, indeed. Let's continue.
Where then is healing? Only where its cause is given its effects.
Mm-hmm.
For sickness is a meaningless attempt to give effects to causelessness and make it be a cause.
Mm-hmm. David?
Always in sickness does the Son of God attempt to make himself his cause and allow himself to be his Father's Son. For this impossible desire, he did not believe that he is love's effect. And must he be caused because of what he is. The cause of healing is the only cause of everything. It has but one effect, and in that recognition, causelessness, is given no effect and none is seen. A mind within a body and a world of other bodies, each within separate minds, are your creations. You, the other mind, created with effects unlike yourself. And as their father, you must be like them.
As you see the world is how you see the world. If you see reality here, you are included in it, in the world. Now, what is an effect seems to be causing you. You seem to be of the world. Instead of just being in the world, not of the world, like we would all hope to achieve in some state of enlightenment, we're in the world and of the world. And that sucks. It's just more world. And you know what happens to things in the world. All of them.
They're not real.
All things in the world have certain destiny. All of them.
Certain
look like certain destiny.
They're all going one way.
What happened to the thing you ate last night for dinner? Did it see it coming? Well, it's a little model here of how things work. Yeah, yeah.
Chicken.
It was a pork chicken. What are you? Things were fine 2 days ago on the farm. What happened? All right, let's continue.
Nothing at all has happened but that you have put yourself to sleep and dreamed a dream in which you were an alien to yourself and but a part of someone else's dream. The miracle does not awaken you but merely shows you who the dreamer is. It teaches you there is a choice of dreams while you are still asleep, depending on the purpose of your dreaming. Do you wish for dreams of healing or dreams of death? A dream is like a memory in that it pictures what you wanted shown to you.
Woo! Rockin'! Rockin' it! Hey, Julie. Page 593. Okay. Carry on.
Five. An empty warehouse, an empty storehouse with an open door holds all your shreds of memories and dreams. Yet if you are the dreamer, you perceive this much at least, that you have caused the dream and can accept another dream as well.
That's clutch now. If you're a pure victim and you're just waiting for things to happen, then you have to wait for it to happen, then decide how it went. I don't know. Well, it's going to go. You know how these things go. I don't know. To understand that you are the dreamer is going to require a whole new contextualization about what you are. Because in the world, the obvious effects of time and space and bodies and the clock, you know, things just happen one after the other. It's A, then it's B, then it's C. One, it's two, and it's three. It's always is. But this book is calling you to awaken from that prison cell of being a body. If you're a body, then you will do as all bodies do. And same thing happened with Jason's dinner last night. That poor chicken did not see it coming. No, there's no escape. Huh?
Kind of envious.
Yeah. There is no escape because remember, we read at the beginning of the class that the thoughts of fear and the ego are just as powerful in their effects as thoughts of truth. Equally powerful. There is no escape from the ego. If the ego is the thought system on which you are relying, if the father of your thoughts comes from limit and fear and bodies and space, then all of them will fall, all the children you'll be living with, and they'll all come from the same parent. Of course. We're calling now your attention to the source of your thoughts. This section is called cause and effect, reversing cause and effect. The ego reverses cause and effect. The effects become causes. It's because you said what you said and things happened that now you're feeling bad. We've gotten rid of the cause entirely. And the effect now is why you have to feel bad. It's out there. You don't have a choice. You have to feel bad now. It's done. You're guilty. There's harm. And you'll now be a victim of the punishment that you deserve. And you have dropped into a level of dreaming now. Of victimhood. And that's how the world works. The beliefs that Walt told us about actually build a whole world this way. Well, you deserve punishment because... or somebody else deserves punishment and you have to mete it out. Oh my God, sticky thicket. No, sticky wicket.
Andrew.
Yeah.
But you're reversing effect and cause, not cause and effect. FYI.
Yeah, man.
It's different.
You swap them around. Okay, let's continue.
Number four or five?
We're in five.
Dreaming produces dreaming.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think I'm on house three. But right? Before this...
Okay.
Another dream as well. Okay. But for this change in content, the dream...
The content of the dream.
Try this again.
Yep.
But for this change in content of the dream,
uh-huh,
it must be realized that it is you who dreamed the dreaming that you do not like.
So key.
It is but an effect that you have caused, and you would not be the cause, you would not be cause of this effect. And you would not be the cause of this effect.
You would not be the cause of this effect.
I keep wanting to reverse it. In dreams of murder and attack, you are the victim in a dying body slain. But in forgiving the dreams, is no one asked to be the victim?
In forgiving dreams, which are way different. You see, forgiveness is itself a dream, but it's a dream that ends dreaming. Why? Because it's release. It's a release at a level of your mind of where pain turns into suffering, for example. That's where the releases are taking place. Forgiveness is a critical release. These are forgiving dreams. They're dreams. They're still dreams. Why? Because you need them. You're in pain. The thoughts are still coming up that you suffer with. So what you need is some forgiveness to go on. Otherwise, you just continue to do the same stuff. You wake up the same thoughts and you think them through and then you finally get out of bed after you shame yourself into standing up. We've got to do better than that. Right? You just continue to repeat. That's why forgiveness is a very important tool for the freedom of your mind. The only place freedom can be. Let's continue.
These are the happy dreams that the miracle exchanges for your own. It does not ask you to make another, only that you see you made the one you would exchange for this.
Okay, we got to stop there. Yeah. Do you see the circle again? How you're responsible for your thinking, and then as you think it and you judge it, that's how it comes around. You get what you think. Well, it's good news and bad news. What do you want first?
I should explain the quick experience.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this retreat house, volunteering, cooking, and the manager, cook, said, we've been talking about the food, and I'm in like, you know, proportion or safety mode or quantity. She goes, that's enough. That's enough. And I'm still doing this two years later. That is enough. Because that's not my perception or training in the world.
Yep.
If there's, I mean, there's enough water for everybody. There's enough. I mean, even if there's not, but the thought, the openness that this woman had, and the freedom, was, yeah, I tried it for a while. And I even consider it now when I recycle, you know, how important is it recycling? Mm-hmm. There's enough. It's all a joke, but that's kind of cynical. But 2 years later, I'm still dealing with that. Can I trust that there's enough? Mm-hmm. Can I trust that there's enough?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's just the material plane, not the spiritual plane. We tell you the spiritual plane.
Well, it's the same call, you know. When with that, of course, we'll call that a miracle impulse. I would like to trust that there's enough. Yeah. I would like that. I'm not sure if I can. Maybe there's too much lack going on. Maybe there's too many measures of lack, and it's too much of a reminder. But I, you know what I would like?
To believe that.
I like to know and believe. I like to believe, and then experience my belief that it's enough. There's enough. Oh yeah, this is a miracle impulse, Jason. This is a desire for freedom. Absolutely, follow it, but don't follow it in the world. We know about the world, right? We know what happened to that chicken. If you want to find enough, there's a miracle impulse, a desire for not only enough, but abundance, not only abundance, but complete liberation. Walt and I had a conversation, remember last week we talked about freedom really isn't quite enough. Liberation is what we're really talking about. Freedom is required for liberation to be experienced, for sure. So the enough will not be experienced in the world, but it will be experienced while you're in the world. If you seek in your own mind for enough, in the present moment, as many times we're called to be still, step back. In meditation throughout this book, it's trying to bring you into a holy instant, in the just a moment of presence. You're stepping out of time. You're stepping out of time just for a moment to discover the instantaneous presence where you actually always exist all the time. You're always there. That's really good news. There is enough. There's complete overflowing abundance in that moment. It's the only place you'll experience it while you're here.
Kind of jealous you have that.
Because in that moment, you need nothing.
Yes! Not only you need nothing, but you recognize you can't have more. You could, even if there was more, you can't have more in that moment. That moment is so full. Mm-hmm. It's the fullest you've ever experienced. 100% full. That's why it's so complete. A real present moment. Exact, in between the seconds. In between them. That stillness. That. The cat wants in on this. Yes?
This is so beautiful. Thank you. what I'm hearing in this last piece is that Well, like, no sense going to God for anything, because he's giving you all that he is. Right? It's like, end of the story. What else is there?
That's
there's
it.
No desire, there's no wants, there's nothing to ask for, there's mm-hmm. no requirement. It's done. It's just in our mind.
The way out is in.
Yeah.
No use going to God someplace else.
Yeah.
You would actually make someplace else to go with your power. You creators, you'd end up making a whole new place to go search for God, which is seek and do not find. Because the truth is, to discover your true freedom, you go in. You go down and in, not up and out. Let's have a circle. Take a deep breath. So here you have it again. Your beliefs. Because of where you are and how drunk you are, time and space and bodies, we really don't have any choice but to follow these beliefs. Have them, follow them, and watch where they steer. It's like an addiction that just keeps coming and coming. But you know what? We have something called the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. part of your mind that's still connected to the truth. Thank you very much. It's like having a radio, and you turn it to the right station and you can hear clear wisdom. And you go through that workbook and every single lesson is just a simple dose of wisdom. Like lesson number 2. Will you give all the meaning that you see to each thought you have? So that's where it comes from. Stop, full stop, full start, full stop. If you don't like it, change your mind. Don't change the world. That script is written. And there's lots of evidence surrounding you. Change your mind about it. That's like not suffering, even though the pain is here. Even though the pain you've committed to already, you know, stubbing your toe happened. Walking around without your shoes on, you knew better. You're dealing with it now. Change your thoughts about that toe. Change your thoughts about that pain. And the suffering will go. Thank you, thank you. Amen. You believers, you.
I just got here to speak.
I'll do that because I really wanted this week too. I'm going to be here for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I was actually like on the 8:50 final. I'll sit up anyway.
Whenever you get here, it's just
the park drama.
Oh.
Because you're not.
It's what they do.